Hey there, and welcome to the Thinking Fellows podcast. My name is Caleb, and I'm joined by our regular hosts today, Drs. Scott Keith, Adam Francisco, and Rod Rosenblatt. The Thinking Fellows podcast is a show about great conversations. It's a production of the 1517 Podcast Network. And what we're doing today is not necessarily a typical episode, but it's in the vein of what we do on every episode, and that is we're doing book recommendations today. I think one of the most valuable parts of the Thinking Fellows is that no matter what series or topics that we've done throughout this show, we have always tried to leave listeners with resources outside of ourselves, right? I think it can get annoying when a podcast becomes like the sole source of authority for people, right?
Like only read Adam's books?
That's right. You know, or if all your information is coming from the Thinking Fellows, you know, that could be problematic. And so what we try to do is point people where we have gathered the knowledge ourselves, where we would direct people to learn more on topics where maybe we fall short in the 40 minutes that we cover things. And so today is going to be an episode primarily just dedicated to, in my mind, gathering some of the best books across as many topics as I can possibly think of while we're recording that I can throw at these guys. Many people may or may not know, but when I sit here and just listen to them without having to search it, just list off books, it's pretty amazing. All three of the people who sit at this table with me are almost like walking libraries. They have all read so much, and they continue to read, which is the kind of crazy thing. Yeah. And so it's always, you know, we could almost do a book recommendation show every month and come up with different books, maybe not in certain categories, because we'll have some ones where maybe, you know, the top five stay fixed at least for a period of time. But if I asked you guys, hey, what are you reading right now? That list is ever changing. And, you know, we've had listeners say, hey, this is, you know, almost my favorite part of the show is you could almost build a reading club off of, you know, little books that the Thinking Fellows drop, which, I think is fantastic, because one of the primary goals of this show is to provide a source of education for people. And I don't think it's possible without at least a little more reading outside of what we do. I mean, even when it comes to doctrine, even if you don't have a lot of time or you're just looking for something basic, we'll point you to things like small and large catechisms. And I think that's just, I don't know, I think it's one of the essential parts of the show. And if we stopped doing it, it wouldn't be the same anymore. And so the last time we did an episode that was purely book recommendations, I think was about 6 months ago. And so I said, hey, maybe we revisit it and do it a little differently this time. I didn't tell any of the guys any of the questions beforehand, so there may be delay as they catch up, but they're pretty quick. So I think we'll jump right in. So my first category that I think I just want to cover the basic categories that we've done on the show. You know, the series that we've done, you know, we've done Christian doctrine, church history, and apologetics. And so I guess I'll just pose it to each of you, and I'm sure there's way more than the number that I'll limit you to, but perhaps each of you could give between like one and five recommendations for each category. So I'll start it. We'll do it with doctrine, and we could do it, you know, as systematics or however you want to do it, but the top 1 to 5 books that you would recommend to somebody if they're trying to learn more about the basics of Christian doctrine.
You're looking at me?
Yep. I'm starting. We'll go in like counterclockwise here.
If it's just sort of Christian doctrine, pop level, I'd have to say right off the bat, Mere Christianity. It's not a systematic per se, but the reader will go through enough of the various critical doctrines of Christianity to get a feel for it. If it's Lutheran...
Well, for those who aren't familiar, Mere Christianity is C.S. Lewis.
Sorry, C.S. Lewis, Mere Christianity. Rod will like to point out that it started out as the case for Christianity and then was later expanded by editors at his publisher, which is escaping me at the moment. Macmillan.
And Macmillan in London. But they were three very small hardbacks to begin with. Beyond Personality was the second.
Yep.
Beginning Steps in the Doctrine of the Trinity. And the third one was Christian Behavior.
Yeah. So it follows that. I mean, it's apologetic. It's systematic. In Lutheran theology, at the popular level, I guess I'd say I would definitely recommend Stephen Paulson's book, which is just Lutheran theology. And then also Steve Mueller at my dean at Concordia wrote Called to Believe, which is a basic systematic text. I think you can get Called to Believe in a shorter and a longer version. The longer version is one that might be used at a higher level undergrad. The smaller version, I would say, is late high school to early college, Called to Believe.
Yeah, the bigger one is called
Called to Believe, Teach, and Confess.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that one's designed, that one is has an additions for some Lutheran church work students, I guess is the idea behind that one. And then the other one is used at least at Concordia Irvine, and I believe it most of the Concordias, as the basic introduction to Christian doctrine.
Right. Well. And then Bob Kolb has a, Dr. Robert Kolb, he's been on the show before, has a basic Christian systematic textbook called The Christian Faith, a Lutheran Exposition, which I think has come out in the early 90s, is excellent. I'll stop there because I'll leave some of the more classic texts to Rod.
All right, Adam, any additions?
Not really technically doctrine. I mean, I can't add. I mean, I do historical theology mostly, so mine's more doctrine as it's historically been expressed. Martin Luther's Theology the name just slipped out of my head. Bernard Lohse. Lohse, L-O-H-S-E.
Roman Catholic.
Yeah, you but like it that. Is, excuse me?
You like that one, yeah. You probably
it's remarkable in terms, I mean, it's a Catholic historian, but a great historian who writes and researches following the principle that you should describe your subject such that your descriptions correspond to that subject without polemicizing, just trying to understand it.
So, mm-hmm.
As a historian, trying to understand the subject that you're studying.
Of Luther and his theology in this case. I don't know. I've got lots of like what might be considered prolegomena type of things, but I don't know that that fits. So like worldviewish stuff, epistemology stuff.
We'll get to that kind of stuff. So Rod, any additions?
Sometimes worth tackling what I would call best of evangelicalism. When I was at Westmont, I used as my textbook T.C. Hammond in Understanding Be Men.
Yeah.
Now, that's been overcome lately by Milne, Know the Truth, M-I-L-N-E, same as the spelling for the children's book. Milne, Know the Truth. Those are worth considering if you want to know the mainline best of sort of Christianity Today evangelicalism, where they're not doing something so parochial that it initiates it. Now, one that I would love to recommend but don't, John Stott, Basic Christianity. And it has a perfectly awful chapter on the Christian life.
Yeah.
He was on the evangelical wing of the Church of England. Marvelous author. Paradigm of the exegete pastor. Just paradigm. But that one is vitiated by that single chapter on the Christian life, which drives a Lutheran up the wall. I think would drive Reformed up the wall, too. Mm. It's a wonderful subject by a wonderful author, and if I could cut that chapter out, or have him rewrite it in a way that was more oriented to the Reformation and the end of Romans 7, I'd say terrific. Or if you can read it and skip that chapter, John Stott, Basic Christianity.
Did you want any of the more classic Lutheran systematic texts that people might run into?
I think we should.
Go ahead.
There's one that just popped in my head. It's Bob Kolb, and I think he co-wrote it with somebody else, called The Genius of Luther's Theology.
Yeah, it's excellent.
Which I think is fantastic. Because it's not just historical theology. It's an exploration of Lutheran theology. And it's very, it's for a not necessarily a lay audience, but a popular, it's like a popular scholarly work.
Yeah, so, it's definitely easy enough to get through.
Yeah.
One of the ones that's come from our circles recently is one by Al Schmidt. And it's the best book I've read so far on Introduction to Confessional Lutheran Thinking. Hmm. He's known for his book that sold a zillion copies, How Christianity Saved the World.
I think it's the West, isn't it?
Okay, I'm not sure, but Al Schmidt. And he used our Concordia Publishing House for good or ill. But Schmidt, that's worth looking up in a catalog somewhere. Al Schmidt, and it's recent, but it's understandable English, and he doesn't describe a subject to death. He does it well, shortly, and moves on.
That Genius of Luther's Theology, the subtitle is great, which is the part of the book that really struck me, Adam, which is the Wittenberg way of thinking.
Yeah.
And it's what Dr. Kolb does is sort of describe, I guess I'd call it the triumvirate, but there's others of thinking that contributed to a Wittenberg way of doing theology, which he describes in the book as being not just Luther's way.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Which was.
It's almost. Great. So I hesitated to think of it as a doctrine book.
But it is.
It is, but.
It's historical, though, too.
Yeah. When I think doctrine, I think your beloved Loci.
Yeah. Well, hey, we can recommend that.
No.
Yeah.
Some of the classics, if people are Lutheran and listening to the show and they want to know sort of what are classic systematics, if you go from, I think, easiest to understand to hardest to understand, you'd go probably from Edward Kehler.
Sure.
Kohler.
Mm-hmm.
Just a summary of Christian doctrine, and then you'd probably go from there to J.T. Mueller's Christian Dogmatics.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd go to from there to Pieper's book of the same name, Christian Dogmatics.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Had to be said, Adam.
Yep, sure does. If you're a Lutheran,
Rod used to assign at least two of those.
Yeah,
so I know. You can't
not say Pieper when you do a systematic recommendation.
Yeah, I was walking across way, way back when I was colloquizing into the LCMS. Our blessed Robert Preuss was overseeing it, and he was out to California, and we were strolling across the lawn on campus at Irvine. He said, "What do you use for a textbook, Rod?" I said, "Kehler or Mueller." He said, "In California?"
Yeah.
As if confessional Lutheranism can't make it over the Rockies.
Yeah.
Right.
No, he was astounded.
Yeah. I had for Doctrine 1, I think I had Dargitz and he assigned Kehler, and then I had you for Doctrine 2 and you assigned Mueller.
Mm-hmm.
That's funny. Okay, well.
The title of that Schmidt volume is Hallmarks of Lutheran Identity.
All right.
Hallmarks of Lutheran Identity.
Cool. Added to the list. All right, so the next category that we do, and this is Adam, this is going to be right up your alley, so I'll start with you this time. But we've done church history in the form of covering individuals, in the form of covering thoughts of particular eras, and so you can, I'll leave it open to you, you can select whatever you want in this category, whether it be about particular individual theologians that you think are just hallmark examples of good Christian history, or eras, textbooks, whatever. You go for it.
How much time do I have?
You have five books, I mean, max.
Okay, so I'm going to suggest that I'm going to skip the early church fathers, only because there's several books that are really good, and I don't know which one to recommend, but let's start like late antique period, 4th, 5th century. Peter Brown, The Rise of Western Christendom, all the way up to about 1000 AD, so 200 to 1000 AD. It is a tour de force. It's exhaustive. It's surprising. And it's sort of like the gold standard for late antique, early medieval history. I really like, though it's dated now, not because the information's out of date, but just it's been 30 some odd years since it was published. It's Stephen Osmond's The Age of Reform, which is, I think, 1250 to 1550. So it's the High Middle Ages up until the Reformation period. There are certainly much there are newer ones that are just as good, but he's got illustrations in there, and it breaks it down into epistemology and theology, ecclesio-political things, and so I really like that book. Another overarching history of the church done by Oxford's premier historian of the church, Dermot McCulloch's. I think it's the American edition, something like the History of Christianity, the first 3,000 years.
Yep.
He is, in terms of just the prose, he's a magnificent gifted. He's like one of those quintessential British authors who can write with clear, plain English, but the substance is just deep. But you don't even notice it because the words carry that substance. So I'm just going to leave that with
nice.
Three.
Yeah. Cool.
Because otherwise I'll go spazzy.
Rod?
On what subject again? History.
History. It could be an individual. It could be an era. Anything that you would recommend?
Oh, I'll defer to Adam on that during the first centuries. His answers would be more cognizant than anything I could throw in. history of doctrine, that's worth thinking about at least. On the Reformed side, it's Louis Burkhoff, History of Christian Doctrines. And on our side, it's...
There's that one by Hagelin, Bengt Hagelin.
Yeah. Yes, that's the one that's used in our seminaries.
Yeah, I'm a little... that.
Yeah. No, this is an older one. I'll think of it later and you can add it to the show.
Henry Esther Jacobs?
Yes. Did he do one?
I believe so. And it's sort of like just a collection of the quotations from Luther through the...
Anything Jacobs did, he was a solid non-Missouri Lutheran and a serious guy.
His edition, two-volume edition of the Book of Concord so long ago is the one that also has texts that didn't make it into the Book of Concord. Huh.
The Bonds of the Will?
The Variatas interim documents.
Gotcha.
A history of the confessions.
Here's the name of that Lutheran History of Christian Doctrine, Klotsch.
That's it.
Klotsch.
Mm-hmm. Can I, since Rod skipped over it as well, I'm going to go back. So it's older, but it's, again, one of these British authors who can put together a clear English sentence. Henry Chadwick.
Oh, yes. That whole Penguin series.
I think it's just the early church.
That's correct.
The early church. And then there's another version.
Southern is another one who did, I think, medieval and ancient church.
Yeah.
That's part of that same pilgrim set.
Yeah.
Scott, anything to add?
I don't have anything.
Penguin set, not pilgrim.
Rod haven't already brought up. Just in sort of generic history, if there's a Luther category, I'd have some recommendations, but would Adam.
One thing that's interesting, when you get in our circles, whatever those are, it's how our reading of history kind of stops shortly after the Reformation.
Yeah.
And a wonderful thing that is.
I would say if we were talking about, modern history, there's been some things I've read lately that...
Yeah, is it Livingston who has a two-volume History of the Christian Church?
Yes, it used to be one-volume hardback. And James Livingston of William and Mary College.
Yeah, and the second volume is the Modern Church, and it is really good.
He has a tremendous ability to pick quotes to illustrate.
Well, or the one that you... it's a short survey that Grenz and Olson, 20th Century Theology.
Yeah, that's good.
It's short, and it's a broad introduction to the history of theological movements in the 20th century.
Yeah. When I was at Westmont, I wanted to title the course The Greased Slide into Oblivion. And the registrar said, we can't put that into the catalog, Rod.
Surprising they didn't go for that.
I said, well, it's an accurate description. Never made it to the catalog.
Go figure. Well, hey, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll have time to do two or three more categories based on how quickly they can answer. All right. Hey there, and welcome to our break. Since this is a book recommendation show, what we're going to talk about today is the 1517 Legacy Shop online. That's at 1517legacy.com. You hit the shop button, or you can go directly to the link at shop.1517legacy.com. Basically, that store is the homepage or the resting page for our publishing house, the 1517 Legacy Publishing House. And we have the entire catalog for sale there. And it's a great way to support us directly. You can buy every single one of our books on Amazon. But if you go directly through us, you can still get free and reduced shipping by getting orders over $20. And then we also get contact with you, and we get to see who's buying our books, what they're doing. We can see if people have purchased them because they listened to the Thinking Fellows, if they've listened to another podcast on our network and things like that. And it's just a great resource. I'm going to offer 10% off your next purchase if you listen to this show, if you use the code ThinkingFellows18, and you'll get 10% off your next purchase at shop.1517legacy.com. There are not only books there, however, there's also great audio content. So we've talked about the Sensible Christianity lectures that are there. There's other lectures from Montgomery there. There's a lecture or two by Jim Nestegan on our shop as well. So there's lots of good material there. When we publish new books, they go there first. The second edition of Being Dad is available there as a hardcover only, but at soft cover prices. So that's an excellent resource that you can get there as well. Every once in a while, we've done bundles there too of books. So during the winter, we did a Thinking Fellows bundle from there. We'll definitely do something like that in the future again as well. You can get our booklets there, like the Medium and Lengthen booklet, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is there as well.
Christ Alone.
Christ Alone booklet, which are just smaller form. They're not, you know, they're still like 40 to 60 pages long, but they're pocketable and they're easy to read. You can also buy our books as ebooks from there, and you can use them on any of your devices that support the EPUB format. So an iPad, a Kindle, a Nook reading device, things like that. So it really is a great place. And by going there, you directly support 1517. You know, we don't get a cut back from Amazon. We actually get to get a little money back from the books, which is great. And we are a nonprofit, and so all that money goes back into publishing new resources, right? We don't pocket any of that cash. I don't make any money because you bought something from the store. That goes back so that we can publish new books. And the publishing house is publishing like a storm. We're planning on doing 7 or 8 new books this year at least, right?
At least. I mean, we get proposals all the time that are either accepted or not accepted, and it, depending on timing and resource availability, it changes, you know, whether those books come out in this year or next year.
Yeah, so with your support purchasing books, we can continue to do that. And so that's shop.1517legacy.com. Again, I'll have that posted in the show notes with the 10% off for ThinkingFellows18 as your code. Okay, guys, let's round out this episode. We got about half an episode left to fill. I knew this category was probably going to be maybe the biggest, but the apologetics category. And I wanted to do essential reading. And one of the reasons for that is if you go to, or if you've seen the list for the Apologetics Academy reading list that Montgomery sends, it's very comprehensive, right? There's a lot of books in this category to get you familiar or comfortable with a lot of different objections.
Yeah, and he includes The Best of Unbelief.
That's right. It's great. But I want to narrow it down to a list of a handful of essentials that might get people started or get some of their bases covered for this show. And I'm sure that we've probably mentioned everything there is to be mentioned in the different apologetic series, but we have new listeners all the time. And so if you're trying to get up to par on the apologetic task, what are the handful of books you would recommend, like the core essentials?
Certainly start with Lewis's The Case for Christianity. That's the first 57 pages of the glued together Mere Christianity.
I believe you can find that now as a standalone book, but if you can't, just buy Mere Christianity.
And if you buy Mere Christianity, you'll check two boxes off of this list that we came up with today.
Yeah, but the case for Christianity is great for giveaway because it looks like something a guy can read the coming weekend. Mere Christianity does not. Then Dr. Montgomery's audio series, Sensible Christianity, for sure. And one of the ones that I had all my students reading was History, Law, and Christianity by Dr. Montgomery. That's just fundamental.
And if, you know, following this break, you use Thinking Fellows 18 at checkout, you can get 10% off those.
Used to be History and Christianity.
Yes, used to be History and Christianity, and it had to be of limited length because he was addressing a national audience throughout Canada.
Yeah.
Lewis was invited to do that. He'd had a heart attack, wrote back and said, I think my traveling days are over. So they asked Dr. Montgomery from Waterloo to do it, and it was a limited audio period of time. So what's become History, Law, and Christianity, and we carry it. Another one that I think is just defining, and I had classes read it, was F.F. Bruce. It had two titles, but it was the same book. One title was The Apostolic Defense of the Gospel. What was the second? The Apostolic Defense of the Gospel. Well, I guess I haven't got the other, but that'll do it for you. Oh, The Defense of the Gospel in the New Testament.
That's how it's published now.
Yeah. Okay. I think it, yeah.
Yeah, if you go to, if you can find it at Barnes & Noble, it'll be under Defense of the Gospel in the New Testament.
Now, he was nowhere near the Reformation in terms of his ecclesiology. He was Plymouth Brethren, and they don't even have clergy. They have educated laity. But he was a scholar that always, even liberals, respected for the solidity of the scholarship. And liberals don't respect anybody. But that one by Bruce is just utterly, utterly basic. With regard to... well, there are some of those InterVarsity booklets. Maybe we can mention those later. Those, the ones the size of playing cards.
Oh yeah, I'm not sure. Can you still get those? Even
I don't know. Yes, I went to their site, and yes, you can. I found 90 of them.
Wow.
Paul Little, Know Why You Believe. It's written for high schoolers. Paul Little of InterVarsity. From our own ranks. Craig Parton, anything that Parton did, I suppose the best known is The Defense Never Rests.
Yeah, A Lawyer's Case for Christianity.
Uh-huh.
We could add Adam, Resurrection Facts.
Has Adam written apologetics books?
What? One or two of them.
Wow.
But I would add that. I think it's really accessible, and it covers modern, like the most recent objections to the historical resurrection. And so, and it's available at shop.1517legacy.com. That's a Resurrection Fact.
Coupled by Stott, again, Evangelical Anglican. The little booklet, The Authority of the Bible, does it the way it should be done, through Christ, his claims, his demonstrated deity, and to his view of the Old Testament, and then his promises concerning the New, John Stott. And another one that's oblique, but you'll get it in just a New York minute, Your Mind Matters. I used as a textbook in our day, especially. Your mind matters. That is, there is something about, we might call thinking Christianity, or ought to be represented by people. John Stott.
Did you mention, I know you mentioned Paul a little bit, Jim Sayers, So Why Should Anyone Believe Anything at All?
Absolutely. more philosophical, but,
yeah,
you know, why should anyone believe anything at all? Exactly what's called for in today's messy college world.
Yeah, with, I mean, and I think it's helpful to do some, one of the things I think we can do at 1517, if people want to engage some of our speakers through our speakers bureau, is have them come out and do something like that. You know, the why should anybody believe anything at all, or a basic apologetic that starts with a basic epistemology.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that several of our speakers would be absolutely capable of doing, mm-hmm, and is really what's needed for the mess that we're in today.
Yeah, I always recommend when asked this.
The Tractatus.
Montgomery's Tractatus,
yes.
Logico Theologicus. I just like this, the format of this book.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it might not be everybody's cup of tea, but I think it covers the basics. It does it in near outline form,
uh-huh,
in sentences. It's digestible. It's easily highlighted for reference again. So
don't be put off by the title. It's patterned after Wittgenstein's Tractatus. Forget the title and try it.
Yeah, I think, so, you know, just retitled,
that
might sell well.
No, he's not going to allow that. No, that's not on the table and won't be.
You could also, so that's, it's his magnum opus, if you will,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Or it's his apologetic, right?
Mm-hmm.
Craig Parton, you mentioned earlier, has a book, Religion on Trial, which is the Tractatus. It's published by Wittgenstock up in Eugene,
right,
Oregon, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And it's short, 50, 60 pages, and it makes the Montgomery's Tractatus very plain,
mm-hmm,
language and narrative, and it, mm-hmm, reads like a narrative. Is, mm-hmm, it, Montgomery's Tractatus is just
bold
propositions
point,
and sub-propositions and sub-sub-sub.
Literally, when I said sentences, I mean literally bullet point sentences, not strung together in paragraphs and the whole nine yards. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's cool. Adam, anything else to add to this list?
I mean, there's a whole bunch more, but I think Dr. Rosenblatt's covered like the ones that you probably, if you want to get started, they're the ones to start with.
I'm going to throw one in just to give him a shout out, because he's had several of us on his radio show, is Greg Kokel's book, Tactics.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
It does a
Socratic questions.
Yeah, high school level, I'd say, late high school, early college level,
mm-hmm,
throws questions and then gives tactics on how to answer questions you might be asked. I'd say it's a good mix of, how would I say this, sort of the ability to tear down another's argument with the ability to make your own positive argument.
Cool.
Yeah, and very non-confrontive in the sense of questions like, I see, and you believe that, why?
Right.
Cool. All right, next category. This one, broad again, but I think it covers some of what Adam wanted to do at the beginning of the show, but... books on philosophy or philosophies that you guys would recommend, classics, modern, maybe even epistemology, things like that that fall into this category.
Yeah, wow.
Ooh, what a vast.
That is expansive. I don't even know where to start.
Yeah.
I've
always used for class intros to fill by atheists because they write better. The classic atheist one was by John Hospers, unbeliever to the core, libertarian, and it went through, I don't know how many reprints.
Is that The World Next Door?
No, it's Intro to Phil, I think.
Oh.
And one we mentioned that's sort of a crossover book, Sires, Why Should Anyone Believe Anything at All?
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of a crossover book.
Yeah. He's got another book. It's in its fourth or fifth edition because he keeps adding to it. Jim Sire does. It's called The Universe Next Door.
That's The Universe
Next
Door.
It's a basic worldview catalog, and it's not philosophy proper, but it's a description.
Yep.
He does his best
to
describe objectively the philosophies of nihilism and Eastern pantheistic monism and postmodernism and so on and so forth.
Yeah, nobody's better at it than Sire.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I too like atheists in a lot of these categories, but I like Language, Truth, and Logic.
Yeah, Ayer.
Ayer. It's analytic philosophy, and I think it's just a kind of excellent book to read if you
want
to kind of stretch your mind and kind of start thinking in those analytic categories.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
if you can, I mean, if you wanted to go to primary sources, I think that people should read some Aristotle, just because I think our world is sort of, the Western world is sort of steeped in it on the whole, whether they know it or not. So some of the primary works by Aristotle would be, if you can, you can get many of them in condensed forms, which is probably...
Yeah, like, I think Penguin sells like a collection of them, which is pretty good. Because I would say, you know, most of the basics are online for free, but the translations are very old or rough or difficult to read, you know, because... The free ones are usually collections of really old editions.
Yeah, one that is not that, I think, if I remember correctly, if you get to England, the Everyman's Book collection will include those. And it won't, nice format, small, and not a problem with English. I was going to mention a Christian author. Probably he was a Bardian Presbyterian or something like that, but he writes a good intro to Phil. That's Ed Miller. Questions That Matter.
Yeah.
Ed Miller.
We used that book in your philosophy religion class 20-some-odd years ago. I still have it on my shelf because I think it's just
it's good.
Essential.
Yeah,
I think one of the reasons I wanted to include philosophy on here was just kind of get people thinking about the world around them category.
Another one by a guy by the name of Palmer has hilarious cartoons in it, and he did the cartoons. Palmer, what's that?
The Center Holds?
Yes. Does the Center Hold? He does one of them historically and the other topically, but it's the same guy.
I hate to go back to Aristotle again, but within the Christian circles, virtue ethics is really making a, I don't want to say a comeback, but what should we say, it's inroads as sort of a primary way of approaching many things, including how you live your life. And I think if people are at all interested in that, they might as well read the source and go to the Nicomachean Ethics, because in my opinion, it's all drawn from that.
Yep, that's good.
But good luck reading Aristotle, though.
This is the kind of thing that might like draw some of our listeners back to the Philosophy 101 class they had. But
another series, this is audio. It used to be cassettes. Now it's, of course, digital. The company was called Knowledge Products, Inc.
Yeah.
And they had recorded intros to the great thinkers. And, you know, the readers of the scripts were guys like Walter Cronkite and others, that's probably too early for you to remember, but they had well-known people doing the reading of these short scripts, and it was great audio intro to who is John Locke and why should I care?
Yeah, well, on the same under the same vein, any of the OUP productions, A Very Short Introduction to ...
Yep.
They have a very short introduction to philosophy. I've read that. It's very good. They actually have one to ancient philosophy, too. It's very good. Philosophy of Law. Any of those are very good. We were talking about them at the break. They're usually done by the best scholars available under contract with OUP.
And they're not like even an eighth of an inch thick.
Yeah, and but the material's dense on the inside. I would say we would be lying if we said everything in there is easily understandable if you're not educated on the subject. I mean, the English words are completely understandable, but the content is still pretty thick, even though it's a short introduction. It'll take some working through for the average person, but still very worthwhile. And then they have these very short introductions on any sort of historical figure, philosophical figure, theological figure that you might think of too. We were discussing at the break how the very short introduction of Aquinas is excellent. I think it's excellent.
Yeah, I think there's over 300 books in that series.
I think Rod owns about 250 of them.
I mean, it's a cool little series.
How many did you buy? Quote, like 100?
Yeah, at least 100. I waited until there was a sale at 50%. Yeah.
A very short introduction to romance literature. He's got it on his shelf. He's all marked up.
So the last thing, just real quickly, not too many things here unless you're reading a lot, but just to cap things off, what is something that you are reading right now or just finished reading, one or two?
I
got to pick from 10?
I'll have to pick from a few. I just finished, within the last week or so, Men Without Work, America's Invisible Crisis. The author is Nicholas Eberstadt. It's highly data-driven on the realities of mostly people in your age group, Caleb, who have completely given up on contributing to society via their work outside the home. And the reasons behind that. It's, in my opinion, it's excellent. I don't remember the names of the people, so he... Eberstadt writes the book and he sends it out to two or three other journalists to react to, and he publishes their reactions as the last three chapters. And those chapters too are excellent because basically those authors will say, I think he overstated this and understated this and he completely forgot to talk about this problem. And so you get, and it's mostly data driven. The other one is that I've just read is Essentialism by Greg McKeown. It's basically an argument from classical authors for reducing the amount of yeses in your life. Mm-hmm. Turning some of those yeses into noes. I need that one in my life.
what's the movie that does that with Jim Carrey? Is it Yes Man?
Liar, Liar. Yes Man? No, I don't know.
I think
you know my disdain for Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
So. I've been working on outlining two... G.K. Chesterton works last week or so. It's going to take a while. One is The Dumb Ox. Gilson called it the best biography of Aquinas.
It's excellent.
Extant.
I read it 2 years ago, I think. 2 or 3 years ago. It's excellent.
Mm-hmm. And the other one is Orthodoxy. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to try and get those out in outline form so somebody can get an idea in 6 pages what's in this book and what's it about.
You can do Orthodoxy in 6 pages. That's good.
At least an outline of it, yeah. Or an overview, view from 30,000 feet.
Yeah,
cool.
Lewis said that everything he wrote, he stole from Chesterton or from MacDonald.
Yeah, George MacDonald.
So, apart from all the weird things you guys make fun of me for reading medieval stuff... So I was asked to write a book review of a work called Christian Hospitality and Muslim Immigration in an Age of Fear.
What? That's crazy.
And
I love it.
So
a book for Merkel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no. This is published by Erdmann and very not optimistic, but
optimistic.
My analysis, I haven't written a review yet, is it's naive. Because I went back to a book I read about 2 years ago when it first came out by Douglas Murray called The Strange Death of Europe. Subtitle, I had it up here, darn. Subtitle something like Islam, Immigration, and the Decline of Christianity in Europe or something like that. And it's interesting. The book Christian Hospitality and Muslim Immigration is written, is a Christian theologian. He calls himself a public theologian. He's in the Reformed tradition.
Yeah, I had a professor once that called him a public theologian.
And he's making a case for Christian pluralism, not soteriological pluralism, but that Christians in the sociological political arena, because God is the sovereign. We aren't. Just let everything unfold as it unfolds.
Wow.
Holy smokes.
That has to do with...
And you think that's naive?
I'm trying to...
For the best construction.
Yeah, I really... I mean...
You know, I think it was Lao Tzu, the philosopher, that said, the goal is to win a war without firing a shot.
Yeah, that's right. Art of War.
The Art of War. Yeah. Now recommended by the Thinking Fellow.
Definitely recommended by Jeff Mallinson some time ago. Hey, Adam, did you ever... we were talking about it, but Jordan Peterson's 12 Rules...
I did not read it, only because I've heard so much of Jordan Peterson that I didn't think I needed to read it. I didn't want to spend the money, basically. As you know, I'm cheap.
I do know this.
But I've also seen I've seen them all on YouTube or in podcast.
It's very long. I'm not sure I've seen them all.
Yeah. Anyway, I read his Maps of Meaning, which is academic scholar
work.
Yeah,
I'd like to read that.
Very difficult. It's Jungian. You know, archetypes and...
He surely
is. It's interesting. It's interesting how much of a sensation he is.
Sort of straight talking.
Straight talking. You got to be a little careful. Don't put, you know, he uses the language of Christianity, but there's no substance behind
that's
it.
That's right. Absolutely.
He was asked once, "Are you a Christian?" He says, "Well, I don't know." He hemmed and hawed. And he says,
"Yeah.
Well, by that you mean, do I believe Jesus rose from the dead? No, I do not." So, yeah. But there's some.
So then
in terms of practical advice,
Apostle
in
Paul,
terms of
not a Christian.
In terms of manning up.
Yeah.
And just getting to work.
There's in the book. There's a great story about his daughter who struggles from I think like an advanced form of rheumatoid arthritis.
Yeah. Serious, I think.
Yeah. I couldn't. I had to put the thing down several times. And he tells it in such a matter of fact way. The straightforwardness is almost what gets you, and it's just
Well, I'm reading something very boring. This is the one. No, it's not very boring. It's informative. But
does it count if it's assigned?
No, this isn't assigned.
Okay.
I'm doing a little project on Luther's Heidelberg Disputation and some stuff for a class, and so I'm reading Luther's Augustinian Theology of the Cross,
Lunvich or no, McGrath?
No, Marco Barone. It was published last year.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
It's an MA thesis
okay. Adapted, and so far it's pretty good. If you're looking for research on the Heidelberg Disputation, it's current and it's informative. So I'm not sure how many listeners are, but there it is. Thank you for joining us on this episode. Like I said, you know, one of the core elements that's in every show is at least a handful of books, maybe one or two, that we try to do, especially when we're doing things like doctrine or a figure in the church or even apologetics. You know, that series was full of books. So if you want to hear more about the selections that were on this list, they are sprinkled throughout other Thinking Fellows episodes. So you can go to any of the series on our website. If you go to thinkingfellows.com and you hit episodes, it comes into categories. You can see all the episodes we've done on Christian doctrine, all the episodes we've done on apologetics, everything we've done, church history, and all the special topics. And you can look through all the show notes there. You can search the website for certain keywords and see where we've talked about these books before. It's a great resource. You can check out other podcasts on the network by visiting 1517legacy.com/podcasts. And as always, the best way to get the shows, in my opinion, is by subscribing on your favorite device via your favorite podcasting app, whether that be the stock one on your phone, either Google Play or Apple Podcasts, or if you use something like Overcast, Stitcher, Spotify. We're available on all those platforms. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time.